BFBS, the Forces Station.
So, first of all, what did you think when Disney Pixar asked you to be in the film?
Yeah, I mean, how exciting is that? How, you don't often get a call from Disney to talk about being, doing a cameo role in a film. So really exciting, delighted to be involved with it. And it's been such a fun process. Meeting some of the team behind the scenes, everything that goes into the production of this kind of a movie, and up to the premiere last night and meeting some of the cast and the director and the producer. So it's been wonderful.
Saw some pictures from the premiere. It looks like it was great fun. But tell us, what inspired you to be an astronaut?
Well, really, it was a journey, an incremental process that started as a passion for flying right from my teenage years as a cadet, wanting to be in aircraft, wanting to join the army and fly with the army and having a fantastic 18-year career. Always trying to stay in the cockpit, really. I became an instructor pilot because that was a way of continuing to fly, and then a test pilot beyond that. And that was really where I started to think, okay, that we were dealing a lot with space industries. It's all about pushing boundaries, cutting edge technology and engineering. And I had to get a degree in flight dynamics as well. So I had to go back to school and improve my educational qualification. So this really step-by-step process. And then suddenly, in my late 30s, I found myself at the right time, right qualifications, right age to apply to be an astronaut when ESA had their selection process. And up until then, no one in the UK had ever been able to apply to be an astronaut before with the European Space Agency. It was the first time they'd opened their doors. So it was a wonderful opportunity.
An incredible one, as you say. Now, Buzz Lightyear encounters some problems during his mission. It's easy to fix things on Earth, but I imagine it's a lot harder to do that in space. So how do you problem solve on the ISS?
Well, you look at what you've got. You work with the tools, the equipment, the time and the resources you've got. On the one hand, it can be harder. But on the other hand, it can simplify the process. If you've got an air system that's failing, or carbon dioxide scrubbers that are failing, or a water purification system that's not working, guess what? You've got to fix it, and you've got to fix it with what you've got. So it is a case of really focusing on the tools that you've got available and how you can problem solve. It's about teamwork. It's about communication, collaboration, and just getting the job done. But sometimes it can be easier when you have limited resources, because you've already got you can't get any more tools than what you've got there available in front of you.
So also in the film, we see the food that Buzz Lightyear and his crew eat. It doesn't look very appealing. You spent 185 days in space. So what did you eat?
Yes, it looked a bit nicer than the food in Lightyear. Not much. I mean, nobody goes to space if you're a foodie. You would have a dreadful time. Food is pretty much fuel. But we kind of camping food, anything that can be heated up with hot water, or anything that arrives in those foil pouches that you can just put in an electric food heater, heat it up, 15 minutes later, it's good to go. So it's that kind of food that 10% of our food is what we call bonus food. It's off the shelf items. So they're the luxury bits that, as long as it's got a good shelf life, as long as it travels well, it's something that can sustain launch, we can get that flown up to us. So I had actually fruit pouches sent, because it was a great way of getting some extra vitamin C and just having some of that organic fruit pouches that you would give to small children. So that was really nice to have that to supplement the diet.
I have to say, I love the fact that when you got up to the ISS, you had a cup of tea and a bacon roll. But in the film, one of the astronauts is worried about doing a spacewalk. You made history by becoming the first British astronaut to officially carry out a spacewalk. Do you remember what your thoughts were? Were you worried at all?
When you go out on a spacewalk, you've done so much training, so much preparation. You're worried about not making a mistake, really. You're messing up, because you're not so much worried about your own safety. But I remember thinking, God, there's so much to do. There's so much potential for human error on a spacewalk. But it's an incredible experience. I remember the night before just looking out the window, visualizing the route that I was going to take. We'd practice the spacewalk in a virtual reality environment several times. So you remember or try to remember every handhold, every body position, how you're going to move from one part of the space station to another. And there's a long way to cover. I mean, I covered the area of a football pitch in the spacewalk, because we had to go to the very furthest edge of the space station and back again, you know, a few times. It's very, very demanding environment. But I would say that you're only worried about making a mistake rather than kind of falling off and disappearing into the universe.
Yes, because that is what the astronaut in the film was a little bit worried about, wasn't she? In the film, we see the astronauts demonstrating their knowledge of STEM subjects, and you are a STEM ambassador. What advice would you give to kids and cadets who are interested in these subjects?
Yeah, I think that it's really important to get, to try and get young people to embrace STEM these days, more so than ever before, because when I speak to school children, I can say, well, what do you want to do? And there's always a, you know, show of hands of people who might want to be an astronaut or might want to, you know, be a scientist or an engineer. But then there's always people who want to go into something that might be creative, into art or drama or literacy or music. And that's brilliant. But everybody has something in common today. And that's whatever career you go into, technology will play a part. And we are living and we're surrounded by technology more and more. And so the more you know about it, it will open doors of opportunity for you, regardless of your career choice. So space is an obvious way to get people inspired into those kind of STEM subjects. And that's why I think it's great. You can watch Lightyear, you can see how people have, you know, come from sort of science backgrounds and use that to the best of their abilities. But I think it's also really important to say, yes, but with STEM subjects, you can also be, you know, brilliant in the music industry or in the art industry or, you know, whatever it is that you want to go into.
We actually have some questions from children from a military school, Talavera Junior School, in fact. So they've been asking, what did you miss most about Earth while you were in space?
The obvious thing is family and friends, because you're detached and so you're isolated away from them. But actually, more than that, it's kind of that feeling of being surrounded by nature. I think the space is a very artificial environment. You've got no change to the atmosphere. It's sterile lighting conditions, same temperature, same humidity, same pressure. And you just want to be immersed in nature. You want to go swimming in the sea. You want to feel the wind and rain on your face. You want to feel the temperatures changing. And I think that's the hardest thing, is you're looking down on Earth and you're seeing it go through the seasons. And yet in the space station, nothing ever changes. So I think that's what you miss. You miss that connection with nature. There's nothing green really in space. And green is the color of nature. We like it. We're surrounded by it on a daily basis down here. And you miss that.
So how did you stay in touch with loved ones while you were in space?
It's quite easy, actually, because we are able to make a phone call whenever we want. We have our computers in our crew quarters, and we can use voice over IP. We can go there and we can ring any number anytime. So, I mean, how cool is that? Who would have thought that today you can go into space and you can just phone anywhere on Earth anytime, and nobody can ring you. So you've got the best of both worlds. So I could make a phone call to my family. And then once a week, we have a video conference as well. And that's really important, because, you know, you get to see your family. You can show them around the space station, take them on a tour. I used to like putting the camera against the cupola window, showing them the view outside the window, let them see the, you know, Earth from space. So that was really special.
We got another question from a military child. Were you able to see Earth's atmosphere while you were in the ISS?
You can, yes, but you can only really see it properly at sunrise or sunset. Because when the sun is high in the sky, you don't get to see the atmosphere, the edge of the atmosphere. But at every sunrise and sunset, the sun illuminates the atmosphere. And it's quite frightening, really. It's very powerful, because you realize how thin it is. I mean, it's 16 kilometers. That's all. If Earth were the size of a football, then the atmosphere would be about as thick as a sheet of A4 paper. And when you see that, it's like, wow, you know, that's it. That's all the air that is trapped by Earth's gravity. And if we pollute that air, if we mess it up, then, you know, there's no more coming along. So it's beautiful to see, but it's also quite startling how thin it is.
And we have another question. So this is coming from another military child. What does space smell like, and does it have a sound?
Well, there is no sound in space. Certainly, no, you know, sound needs to travel through a medium like air or water. So in a vacuum of space, it's quite funny because when you go and do a spacewalk, you've got loads of tools and equipment on you. It's a bit like being a rock climber with loads of carabiners, and they're clinking away, making a huge din of noise. And you go into the airlock, you shut the hatch and you depressurize down to vacuum. And after a while, you're still moving around and you can see all of this metal on metal banging around, but there's no noise at all, and it's really spooky to hear the silence of space, the silence of the vacuum of space. So no, it doesn't have any sound. Sorry, what was the first part of the question? Was the smell of space is weird. It's very hard to describe, and I think no two astronauts can quite agree on what it smells like, but it's a bit like burnt barbecue. You know, if you've left the beef steaks on the barbecue for a bit too long, you get that kind of burnt smell, almost a metallic smell actually. And whenever we bring in experiments from space through the airlock, you open up the airlock and you get that distinctive kind of burnt metal smell. And there are some theories that it might be atomic oxygen, tiny, you know, we are in the vacuum of space, but there is, you know, tiny traces of atomic oxygen up around 400 kilometers where the space station is. So if that's getting into the airlock, when we repressurize the airlock, that atomic oxygen mixes with O2 from the atmosphere and becomes O3 ozone. So some people think that might be what we're smelling, is actually ozone that's being created in the airlock.
So just finally then, just wondering, when families go to see Lightyear, what do you hope that they're going to take away from the film?
Oh, many things. Really. On the face of it, it's fun, it's action, adventure, it's inspiring, it's pure entertainment, but you get really immersed into that space environment. And there are some really good messages. We're going on a really powerful journey with Buzz, on an emotional journey in seeing the character, seeing what he's like. You know, you go from this strong, character who's got a big ego and likes to get the job done and very determined, very resilient, perseveres, and suddenly, you know, realizes actually that, you know, he can make a mistake and he needs to ask for help, and it's more about teamwork, about cooperation, about collaboration, and we see that, and there's a different Buzz really at the end of the movie to the one that started. And I think that's really quite a special message to take away, is that, you know, it's okay to be wrong, it's okay to ask for help, and we should be working as a team to get the job done.
Well, thank you very much for speaking to us. It was a fantastic chat.
Thanks, Natasha. Thanks very much. Great talking to you.
BFBS, the Forces Station.